This is the beginning of class 11.
Sashi Bhurghi Jushin Netosham Viravin Shinyande Yambadi Sangye Shindu
keeping on the same object. So let's say you're staring at the same object. You see what I mean? It's the same cause. The causes. Each moment causes the next moment of. Each moment of consciousness causes the next moment of consciousness. And then there's no. This is a direct cause of this. This is a direct cause of this. And this has to be continuous. This has to bump up against that moment. And that's what the meaning of the direct cause is, that there's nothing between them. Mm-hmm. Except that as a priori, there has to be parts of the first moment of mind that are closer to the second moment of mind than other parts of the first moment of mind. Because if that were not the case,
they'd be on top of
they'd match, and there would be never be any movement of time.
Is that the same as the argument that's for exactly reincarnation? Consciousness?
Oh, it's related. It's based on the same fact that consciousness has to cause consciousness.
Okay.
If you accept that for 2 seconds, milliseconds in time, you've just accepted past birth.
Right.
Okay. So isn't that where
could
the cause is a little bit...
Once you accept that, that consciousness has to come from consciousness and not from birth, not from this parent's blood and semen, not from any other cause but mine, then you have to accept the cause of mine.
How does except for the first original generation, which is not addressed in
you mean the first time it ever happened or something like that?
Yeah, because if it has to have come from previous consciousness, then that's not a good argument because for the, exactly the reasons that you're saying that, which is, well, if it came from something, it had to come from what? So what might that be? Class.
Well, tell me anything. I mean, I say it comes from consciousness because it has to come from something similar, the same stuff. That's true of apple trees, that's true of telephone poles, that's true of bases.
Unless you can say what it came from, I think. I don't want to take
you mean,
much time.
The
I don't
think that's the very first cause.
For example,
therefore,
yeah.
There is no first cause. Which doesn't mean it
that's
has
not
no
logical.
Cause. It doesn't mean it has to. It's absolutely logical. It's not logical to the Westerner who has the what do you call it, the bias or the prejudice that you grew up with. That it's quite logical. It's perfectly logical. It's just you didn't hear it before. Your parents didn't tell you when you're 5 years old. Oh, your mind is beginningless because any point of mind that you can point to must have had a mind before it's a concept. And if they had, you'd feel quite comfortable with it. And maybe not for very good reasons.
Okay, we've heard you make fun of people who are trying to advance this point, and you say, well, where does that come from? And the guy says, well, such and such, and you back him up, and finally they say, well, I don't know. And to me, you've just said, well, I don't know.
No, I can point to any moment of mind, any moment of consciousness, I say, has to have come from a previous moment.
Mexican
stand-up, but I defer. Okay, thank you. Dani Jin Sonamgi, Dora Penshi Sangye Dukwa Sho. Sangye Chodam Soki Chong Nama, Jangchu Padu Dani Kya Suchi. Tagi chinyan ji pe sonam ki Chola penche sangye jupa sho.
Help me on this, Michael.
Zashi buki Chilu
Buddha when they're debating whether the person who wrote this book he's doing it for his own benefit or for others. If they assume he's a Buddha, if their argument is coming from the place that they think Buddhas don't need to worry about themselves, then they've already broken a rule of the day, which is that you can't bring up Tantra. You can't get into that realm in a sutra debate. You can't. Otherwise, you're going to get very confused. As you know, if you've had any exposure to it, you know. So he said, you have failed to distinguish between what we call the tumori lupa and the tumori lupa, which means the way which is shared and the way which is not shared. What's the way which is shared? The three principal paths. Which is the way which is not shared? Because why is it shared? Because you need it in Tantra and you need it in Sutra to get anywhere. In fact, it's the cause for it, succeeding in Tantra. And then he has failed to distinguish between secret and non-secret. Maybe he's right, but he shouldn't have brought it up in the context of the open teaching.
So it's out of context.
Yeah, it's a failure to distinguish the right time to talk about these things.
So that's the answer. That's it.
Well, can a Mahayana person still have the aspiration to fill his own needs? Of course. And you've had it in several different ways. You've had it as the person who, in the Lam Rim, he follows the lesser person and the medium person's motivation. You've had it in the refuge, when he also shares the motivation of the Lam Rim, but not as an exclusive motivation. And Dharmakirti, he said, he did say, hi. This is Roach. I'm in the middle of a class, but I have to tell you, I'll call you later. Is that okay? Okay. Good. It's a deal. Okay. Bye.
Michael, before you go on to the next question, isn't the point that a Mahayana person has to have the...
He does.
Has to.
Yeah,
you know, not can.
That.
You know, must.
Okay. You have to have bodhicitta and bodhicitta.
Yeah, and apparently that, people still... I asked Rinpoche, I went through it with him, he got Thumbo with me. Thumbo is what? You know what Thumbo means?
Thumbo
is the honorific for
octopus, as they say in German.
And a lama, when a lama is Rafa, it's his Rafa aspect. I asked him like three times over, and he doesn't like that at all. He doesn't like it the first time. But why a Buddha still has to be, it's like, are you crazy? What is he doing? But Ariel brought it up in the car well. She said, if he has the aspiration to achieve Buddhahood, then aspiration is almost by definition when you don't have something and you're aspiring to get something. And in Tibetan, it's Matoba Tobaga Junior, like that. Matoba Tobaga Junior. So I said to Rinpoche, well, does he have Matoba Tobaga Junior? He says, no. He says, he has aspiration, but it's not the kind of aspiration where you're trying to get something that you don't have. So I said, well, isn't that the meaning of aspiration? And he said, no, he's got this kind of aspiration where he just wants to be a Buddha.
Okay. That's not aspiration.
And then she said, well, that's not aspiration, unless there's a chance he could lose Buddhahood, so he could aspire to keep his Buddhahood. And I said, it's not like that either. He just wants to help others, and he wants to be a Buddha.
Like Popeye.
He never loses the want to be a Buddha. And we call that want dunya. And it's an unusual use of the word aspiration. So I think you have to leave it with that.
Oh, boy.
Right.
Thank you for giving us that question.
It's not aspiration in its normal sense. Of getting something that you don't have.
It's already having it and still wanting to have it.
I think
because you've had
logically,
it.
this is exactly what we do in the debate ground. We get to this point, and all the students agree. We sit there and we say, well, that's all it can be. That's all it can mean here. What else could it mean here? And then we go and somebody actually, what happens normally is you go read a scripture and suddenly you see, oh, this guy said exactly what we expect. You know, that's normally what happens. You figure it out in the debate ground, and the next day you find it in the 10th century text. It just pretty much has to be like that.
So
your questions were good and valid. And you have to
say it. Well, I got a few more on that.
So that's what this review is for.
So before Buddhahood then, bodhicitta is the aspiration to become a Buddha for the benefit of all beings.
That you haven't reached it.
Well, to become a Buddha.
That's
the key operative word here is become. Okay, then after one becomes a Buddha, bodhicitta is still there, but there's a new nuance to it, which is to stay a Buddha, even though you couldn't unbecome a Buddha.
Maybe to be
stay as a Buddha, or to like to be a Buddha.
Something like that.
That makes sense.
That's the only logical thing.
So the bodhicitta is there in both cases, it's just that the wish to help others doesn't change.
That's
in the case.
Yeah, you never need that.
So it's just the understanding of being a Buddha, which is
right.
That makes sense.
All right.
Go over the whole exam.
I am going to, if you don't have any more questions.
What? Go over the exam so that you know, so that we know what sort of to expect.
Oh, and the last step, you know, what did Dharmakirti say was necessary at the top? It's very easy. It should have been. And he's speaking specifically about mantras used in Tantra, by the way, that it should have been composed by a holy being. Eh? And then from our side, you have to follow the rules of that practice. So this applies to all Tantra practice, not just the mantras of Tantra. But it, the Tantra has to have been instituted by a holy being.
A holy being, not a Buddha?
It's all it says is Devu Dhamma. That usually means a Buddha.
In the text, it just talks about a... You know, the teacher who gives the
initiation, the
preceptor.
Is it referring to the womb, or is it referring to the initial origination of the time?
That was one of the qualifications of a lama, incidentally.
That would
be a holy being.
No, but we didn't go
into one of the qualifications of a lama?
No.
A sutra or tantra?
No, we made
it. Not with hairs and...
You have to follow the practice. Specifically, the Dao.
And this is what you said was the origination?
Yeah, the origination.
Could you just explain number four, the quiz question?
What did it say?
Does emptiness itself have parts? How so?
I thought everybody got that right. Anybody want to explain more?
Emptiness?
What is emptiness?
That was the one that you said that you couldn't really prove.
You see, you proved the emptiness. You proved the parts of space in the space that you were supposed to prove. No, it's all right. The one you were supposed to prove the parts of mental object, not physical. And then the other one was emptiness, not space. Maybe you got confused empty space and emptiness. Because that happens a lot. And you're a great scholar, so you're confused about that.
Michael, in that last question, the Dharmakirti question, the single finger of fate, you said, the way you worded it on the exam, it sounded like you gave the Tibetan class two distinct terms.
Was it? I don't remember.
Shared and non-shared.
Number 9, number 8.
Oh, yeah. The two moments must be present. Name them.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
This is 10.
It's what you wrote. It will be...
I didn't say anything about holy beings. I just said teacher, but of course...
No, teachers aren't.
I just spaced
out the right. All right. I want to do it, yeah.
Just quickly, back on the homework for today, under 2A, is a simple yes a good answer, or is that real lame? Suppose Maitreya is...
Normally it's not a good answer.
Does he still have the wish for enlightenment?
Say again?
Suppose Maitreya is already a Buddha, does he still have the wish for enlightenment?
Or in this case, a simple yes is acceptable.
Thank you. 2A. 2B needs to
be... Normally it's not good to answer before you want to.
What's
answer
to 2B?
Anybody else?
I have a question from way back, if that's all right. Do we have to memorize the long definition of the greater ways? Which, oh, thank you.
John has
this is going to be
good
quizzes, right?
The final only comes from quizzes.
quiz answer for 15?
No, the quiz is saying you know the
quiz. Did you hear that?
Yes, I know.
That's the one that's like about a book.
It's only in the homework.
And frankly, when it gets to Jesse 2 years later,
the short
all you remember is
I'm so glad.
I couldn't learn that.
Of course,
I
2 weeks
either.
Later, we may not remember.
It's like medical students, right? You know, it's a goodie with the goozers.
So the answer to 2B.
So if the Bodhisattva is already a Buddha, if yes, does his wish fit the short definition of the wish for enlightenment? I think perhaps a simple yes may not be as welcome.
No, that's okay. Obviously, the preferable she could give this is short process. He still wants to help ultimately, and he still wants to be a Buddha. We're not going to say become.
Is it?
You could have defined it for a Bodhisattva as be a Buddha, right? Maybe you could get out of it that way.
What are you talking about?
He wants to, that a Bodhi, if you define it this way, you might get out of the whole problem. If you say the definition of Bodhisattva is to want to be a Buddha for all other beings,
it would stretch it a little better.
Yeah, you stretch the word.
So the idea with the answer to that question is, when you have the wish for enlightenment, you achieve the Dharmakaya, and the Dharmakaya is the enjoyment body.
No, those are separate. The jungle body is the form body, which is the opposed to
the mnemonica or pupika.
Yeah, the form body has two parts. There's the part of his beautiful form in paradise, and then there's the part of his form as he shows it on earth.
So which is the enjoyment body?
The one is in his paradise.
Sambhoga.
Yeah. Sambhoga. And a lot of people get that mixed up with sambhoga. A lot of lamas say sambhoga, and they mix it up.
So when you're saying that he's trying to pursue his own, to fulfill his own needs then, and you're using the explanation of pursuing an enjoyment body is fulfilling
his needs.
Oh,
that's only for others' needs. See, that's principally for others' needs.
He gets the enjoyment body from fulfilling
the other reason
needs.
He has, the function of the form body, principally, is to help other people.
Which
the fulfillment of other people's needs, because it's the only one that can teach.
And which provides him with enjoyment.
It is the enjoyment body.
It is his enjoyment body. So in terms
the fulfillment of others' needs and the enjoyment body are the same thing.
So in terms of the wish, right?
Yeah. What he gives in the enjoyment body? Mainly the collection of matter.
Yeah.
As opposed to the collection of wisdom.
What I was trying to get to was just using that body to define how the wish fulfills his needs. You see what I mean?
No, the Dharmakaya is the fulfillment of his needs, mainly, principally.
In what way?
Thank you.
Omniscience. and removing all his, realizing all objects and removing all obstacles. That's fulfills his benefit. That's mainly his benefit. And then the fact that he shows himself, which is the whole rupakaya part, the whole form body, is mainly for other people. It's mainly the fulfillment of other people's spirit. Yeah.
Is somewhere in there, is it implied that since it is mainly for the benefit of other beings, then that it's otherwise, were it not for that, it's not necessary for a Buddha or a being on that level to have any kind of form body at all?
Yeah, mainly it's for other beings. Yeah.
Right. So if it were not for the bodhicitta involved, they could exist in some sort of dharmakaya form, and that's it. And the only beings who could be in contact with them were other beings on that form.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a really artificial distinction. I mean, how much good are you without omniscience?
Oh, not much, and that's why they say principle.
Yeah.
Or maybe you feel more comfortable with direct benefit. Manifest benefit. You see, that's not improper in a debate to say, you know, the form body is the manifest benefit, but the driver behind the form body is obviously the Dharmakaya. Yes, ma'am. Anything?
I missed the first class, and maybe I'm just a dummy. What's Dharmakaya?
Oh,
I thought it was the form body.
When you divide the bodies into two, and you can divide them also into three or four, there's mainly the form body or the Dharma body. The Dharma body consists of his omniscience and the emptiness of that omniscience.
Okay.
And then the form body consists of two different bodies, the one he shows on earth, and then the one he shows, and then the one who lives in his paradise. his physical manifestation, whether it be in his own paradise or whether it be on planet Earth for the benefit of us. Those two form bodies are called the Nirmanakaya. The word Nirmanakaya is the one he sends down to Earth. And it means, Nirman means to send down. It's a movie theater, you know, video body. The other one is the Sambhogakaya, which means, you know, the body that's blissing out in its paradise. The enjoyment body.
B-H-O-G-A?
Yeah. The Dharmakaya is
the Sambhoga means bliss out.
Yeah. It means Dzogpa Long Shiva, to enjoy to its fullest extent, literally.
So would he also have enjoyment from his Dharmakaya?
I'm sure he does, right? Helping others. You know, that's the main. People can learn from directly from the Sambhogakaya, but they have to be very high bodhisattvas. Like?
Like
Shri? No,
Asanga. When you say it's a body, what does it look like? Does it physically look anything like a person?
Well, that's a good point, and I liked Thupten Jinpa. I like him for one reason. He thinks about translations. He just doesn't accept the old ones. He calls it the embodiment. In Arizona, he was using that word, and I kind of liked it. Meaning, you know, not that because the Dharmakaya, the body of Dharma, what does that mean? You know, I mean, there's no thing you can see. Body normally means you can see. Or is it that he has four different bodies running around? And I used to get really confused about that. The word is body. The word is four bodies. But obviously, they aren't like these kind of bodies. They're all just aspects of the same being. They're like the five heaps of that being.
So both the Sambhogakaya and their Dharmakaya are not like human forms, but there's some kind of
right. They are cohesion. Described as visible but not matter.
The Dharmakaya also?
No.
No.
The two form bodies are visible, but they are not. They are not what we call in Tibetan Pembo, which means particulate matter. They are stuff, but not matter. They're visible, but not matter. They're touchable, but not matter. They're physical, but not matter. That's difficult.
So if you perceive emptiness directly and you, with the individual analysis, you see the Dharmakaya, what does it look like?
It's empty.
There's no visual.
I don't mean, yeah, when I say see, I mean, you know.
Perceive.
Perceive in your mind. Yeah, this is important.
Dharmakaya encompasses both form body and Dharma body.
No. Dharmakaya only is the half which includes his omniscience and the emptiness of that omniscience.
So that's Sambhogakaya.
No, Sambhogakaya is the physical body in his paradise.
I'm going back to the first week. You and I took down the quote and just repeated it because ultimately
I hate it when they quote me in it.
What makes something an ultimate refuge, and I quote, is its quality of being the final goal achieved with regards to the journey along the path.
No, what makes something what makes something is an ultimate refuge is when the journey along the path has been completed. That's the definition.
Okay, so it's the complete
the
end.
Any refuge in which the journey along the path
has reached the end.
Reaching the end.
Why do we need the journey along the path? I guess
that's the definition in the book. I'm not going to change it. It must be a reason.
It's redundant, but it's good.
Good redundant.
No, I mean, if you're in a debate, they say, well, there's a reason, you know, they're trying to make it, trying to emphasize that it's a result of God. Or they're trying to emphasize that it's not the path, it's the result. See, you could say it differently.
The final refuge is at the end of the journey towards the final refuge.
Anything else? I have one question, okay?
We'll try to help you, Michael.
About the last two things, okay? The last two things I'm talking about. Kariya, too. Normally when people get confused, because I'm confused. And I looked up, I used the computer, and I wanted to put in a plug-in for the computer, you know what I mean? I was able, in the traffic jam in the Lincoln Tunnel, to look up every reference to the eighth Bodhisattva level in a few minutes. and read them all and understand everything that the book says about the eight, and it's 1,000 pages. So, and then I just cut it out. I cut them all out, paste them together, put it in another file. Now I can read you every reference to the eight booming, and they're all very interesting. They shed a lot of light on it, and they explain why I was confused. So here we go. The first section I cut out says that, and you don't have to write them on, it might be too much for you right now, but it says, a person who's on the pure levels, which is 8, 9, 10, right, bodhisattva levels, in the period in which they are out of meditation on emptiness, right, when they're not in direct meditation on emptiness, things appear to them as truly existing, but they don't believe it. So that was his, the first thing he said. And here's the one I think Kaga helps the most, the next one. It says, according to our own system, which is who? Yeah, don't forget, even Kirita Madhagya, when he teaches Satantrika, he puts on a Satantrika hat. And he says, according to our own system, a person who has not been on the lower track before. There are people who start on the Mahayana track. And, you know, it's not necessary that you be one of the lower tracks. You can start on the Mahayana track. So he's saying, let's talk about it. It's called Melang Unumasoro. It means a person who started right off on track number 3 from the beginning.
I thought you had to do it chronologically.
No, you don't have to go up through the 3 tracks. You can start right on Mahayana track. In fact, they encourage you to do that. They say it saves time. You can start right from the first path of the Mahayana track. Okay. So he's talking about a person like that. Why? Why did he say that? He doesn't want to. He wants to isolate that person who's going through the bhumis without ever having been an arhat before. Because if he's been an arhat before, he got rid of all his mental affliction obstacles, meaning mental afflictions on the sea, before. So that would be a little bad. It would be a bad case to try to figure out when does a person who's only been on the bodhisattva track get rid of his mental affliction. Which is the interesting thing.
When does he?
Okay. good. So the first, you know what he is. He's a bodhisattva who's never been on the lower tracks. He reaches the same level as the Hinayana arhats as far as getting rid of his mental afflictions and the seeds. And he achieves Buddhahood, total Buddhahood, at the same time.
No, wait a wow.
Oh, it all happens at the end.
No, you said that. Originally, you said that.
Yeah, and then I flipped up.
How can that be possible?
Wait,
that would mean that he hasn't perceived emptiness directly.
No, no. He gets rid of his nyingas, his mental affliction obstacles, meaning mental affliction tendencies, only at the moment that he achieves Buddhahood, which means he carries them through what? The last three
right
rules,
to the end.
Too. He still has them on the
so
left.
So he can still have a...
So the point at which he has abandoned everything
that... He has no nirvana until he
has... Yeah, arhat abandoned. It's not until he achieves Buddhahood. It's not until he achieves Buddhahood that he's gotten rid of all the baggage that a lower arhat already got rid of. As far as mental affliction obstacles. But he also gets rid of what?
Obstacles to omniscience.
The omniscience obstacles. Does the lower guy get rid of those ever? Yeah. No, never. So we can say that a person who's never been on the lower track abandons the mental affliction obstacles and the omniscient obstacles
at the same time, right at the becoming
at the
of Buddhahood.
Yeah. And that was my point of confusion.
So they get the nirvana and the omniscience simultaneously, whereas someone who's already been a Hinayana arhat gets the omniscience at Buddhahood.
No, this is not on your exam. I'm just saying it. You don't have to get it. If it's a little confusing, then I just want it said. And I can correct his... Now I can correct his chart. But I couldn't. I
wonder what happened to the chart.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to let it out not knowing
the
chart.
Oh,
but wait a minute. Then what is...
By the way, it says here, and I'm going to quote it directly, okay? It says... by the way, he quotes a scripture to prove it from the Tengger. And then he says, therefore, when a bodhisattva gets rid of his mental affliction obstacles, he at the same time gets rid of his omniscience obstacles. And so, he says, at the same moment, he becomes an arhat and a Buddha.
But Michael, what does that do to the path of no more learning? How is that a path then?
It's not a path. It never was. Path of no more learning is really just a result.
But that's Buddhahood, yeah. So why even name it separately?
Because it's called that. Well, I don't know why. I don't know why they call it path, frankly, because it's not a. By that time, it's really a state that you reach from the first four paths. Is that what you mean?
Right, but it's made it sound like it was the last, you know.
No, it's not the last stage. It's
stage
the result.
Prior to
it is the result. Path number five is a result in every case. No more learning is just the result of the first four paths. It's called a path. But don't forget, path can just mean knowledge, state of knowledge. It doesn't mean, you know, something that gets you somewhere necessarily.
But then why isn't it called omniscience?
Well, no more learning is omniscience.
Mahayana, no more learning path. Mahayana, arhat. Buddhahood. Moment after the 10th bodhisattva bhumi finishes. Getting rid of your mental friction obstacles in this school. Getting rid of your omniscience obstacles. If you haven't done, by the way, that first one before, on a lower path, those all occur at the same time.
Okay,
in
the school may be the important call.
We're getting there. Okay.
Mahayana arhat, who was in a Hinayana arhat before.
Right. Now, here's an answer to another question I had. He says, this just happened to pop up, so I wrote it down. A person who has Jukasenke, the form of bodhisattva, chitta in which you're actually engaging. You have that. What path can you have that on? He says you can have it from the first path of the Mahayana track, path of accumulation, up to a Buddha level. You can have that kind of bodhicitta, which is engaging.
We need our chart.
First path,
right? Right, obviously.
Well, we were talking about track. You were calling track.
Mahayana track.
Track. This is track.
And then he says something interesting. He says, but the wishing form, the praying form, the form in which you're praying, and which does not rely directly on actually engaging or taking the vows, he says, you can have that from the first path of Mahayana, which is the accumulation path, all the way up to the eighth bodhisattva level. Through the seventh.
How can you be a bodhisattva
So now I asked Rinpoche, I got him in the corner. he hasn't looked at this stuff for 35 years. I mean, you have to realize that too. I said, listen, you know, can you have both at the same time? You know, because I presented it in class, in one of these classes, as, oh, one is before you take the vows and one is after you take the vows. Now, I now think that's
you
probably
did in
wrong.
Our class.
Okay. I think it's that, I think the key is in the word, it depends on the vows. And it depends on actually engaging. So I think you can have the one in the back of your mind and while you're in your room and not directly engaging and helping other people. Looks like that.
You wouldn't have them simultaneously. One would be.
Well, that's a question. I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think you'd have them at the same moment. You know, but maybe you alternate between them. Directly dependent on taking the vow. No, maybe you're not at that moment engaging in the activities that are keeping your vow. We got to study that more. I admit that. No time tonight. Okay. All right. And he says, the reason I brought that up is it says here, from the eighth level up to the wisdom that is out of meditation, there is never a time when the object does not appear to that person as not being self-existent. Which, to put it positively, stating it, all objects are appearing not as self-existent to a person who's on the last few beliefs.
Appearing empty.
Can't say empty.
What are they appearing?
There's going to be a trick here. They are appearing. There's never a time when objects are not appearing to a person on the last three days of the beliefs as not self-existent.
Which means that they're always appearing self-existently, unless they're in meditation.
No, there's never a time when they're not appearing not as self-existent.
You have three negatives.
Which is to say positively.
Never a time.
They're always appearing, appearing as not self-existent.
But that's just conscious.
Wait, we're going to get there. Stay with me. This is interesting. This is a little bit too interesting. Maybe I shouldn't bring this up. Don't get
me. Do you think we should be doing a review?
I mean, we'll get to that. I'll give you all the answers.
When? This is a review.
I'll give you all the questions.
Yeah, but
well, it's a review of what he said. But how about the answers?
Review for the next person. Not preview. I mean,
really here's something that says, Sagittarius.
Just, you try. Dancing with you are fun. Study for it.
A person from the eighth bodhisattva level has given up permanently the manifest form of grasping to self-existence. He has the seed, but it no longer ever happens.
Oh, so that's
life.
The same.
Okay.
We had that in there.
Go back to your first.
We had that as a level, as a bodhisattva level.
Wait, listen to them all and then tell me if then ask me questions about it.
Okay. The ripening bodhicitta? The same one? Still has the seeds,
okay.
But everything is gone.
Yeah. Here's the catch, okay? Here's why I was confused. He says, now we're going to talk about whether or not you can say that this book that we're studying, which is what?
The analysis of the perfection of wisdom, or the overview, either one.
You're studying a commentary on the Prasna Paramita.
The Ornament of Religion.
It's a Sangha's book.
Ornament of Religion.
Some debater comes up and says, this is a Prasna Paramita book. This book is Prasna Paramita. And the way he beats him is he says, oh, well, I guess that this book says that you get rid of your mental affliction obstacles at the eighth level, huh? Which means what? What does that imply?
That the Prasangika say that you get rid of the
mental
afflictive obstacles at the eighth level.
At the eighth level. Okay. You see what I mean? That's the debate. That's pretty clear, at least to me. Okay. That's all. So it means that the reason I was confused is I just got out of my Nimikka a couple of years ago, Prasangika, and they taught us in that class that at the eighth level you get rid of your mental afflictions and all the fears.
But not here.
But not in this school. Okay. Next thing is that there's never a time when the compassion of a person on the eighth level doesn't realize that the person, that the beings it's focused on are empty.
Again, never not. So you always realize they're empty.
Yeah, it's always seeing them as an illusion. They look like they're not empty, but he knows they are. Okay, here's the last one, okay? And then we'll really go to review.
Okay.
Dibe Lugla, in this system, the sentient beings that the compassion is looking at appear to be. Oh, it's running out of battery. Jeez, you're lucky. The sentient beings that this love is focused on both appear to be self-existent and also appear to be not self-existent.
To whom?
To a person on the eighth level. That's what I want to get to. Okay?
Simultaneously?
Yes.
thought only a Buddhist saw emptiness.
Right, good. So what it's saying is this. On the eighth level up, there's never a time when the Bodhisattva isn't directly aware that he's crazy, that things are an illusion. And that awareness is called things appearing to him as self-existing and things appearing to him as at the same time as not being self-existing. Just that thinking that way. But it's not like a Buddha.
It's not direct Buddha, perception of both.
A Buddha is seeing the horse and the stick exactly at the same time. He's like some kind of unbelievable spectator who sees the deceptive reality and the real thing at the same time. Which is almost incomprehensible. That some who could come up to a magic show and see the stick as a stick and see the stick as an elephant at the same time.
So this is like the latecomer. This is like the latecomer.
No.
Not the Buddha, but the eighth level up.
It's the eighth level up.
It's like a non-Buddha.
Yeah.
That's why they say a non-Buddha.
No, it's not.
Why not? He said emptiness meditation.
No, she's saying the late. Oh, you're right. You're right, yeah.
Okay.
No, he's more like the magician.
More like the magician.
Okay, so that's all. Now, I really will go through the final. Please don't write down the question.
That's one.
That would be tacky.
Just for 10 minutes.
Jeffrey. How about
matching? We just run X. I was taught that you have to develop the motivation of the three scopes, first, the low, then the middle, then the higher.
Oh, in Long Rim, you mean in sequential order?
Yes. Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, you have to have renunciation.
Yeah, that's true.
So how can you go straight to Mahayana and not go through the scopes?
Well, don't forget this is the whole track where you are... Oh, getting renunciation and getting bodhicitta in Mahayana track on the same moment, right?
So the idea is as soon as you start Mahayana, you like spontaneously have gotten
true renunciation and true bodhicitta occur at the same time. As opposed to goosebumps renunciation and sugarcane bodhicitta.
Right at the outside of the path.
Yeah.
Goosebumps
renunciation. There's a thing called goosebumps renunciation. That's what you get on your mother's diet. Seriously, everyone gets that. And for 2 months, you're moral, and you're aware of the impermanence of life, and you're very sensitive to people, and everything is really religious. You are, for a short period, you're like really aware of the high truth and of what's important and what's not important. And then it wears off. That's why it's called goosebump. It's not real renunciation, but it's very close. When something, so when somebody really close to you dies, especially your mother.
That happened every 2 months.
Does that happen for your father? Is that what you're saying?
I'd say especially for your mother. You know, unless you had, there are these people who had terrible experiences with their mothers. But it's very rare. Normal people. Normal experience. All right. Give a brief definition of the perfection of... Don't write it down! We can go around. I mean, this is just fun. I mean, last time I wanted to do this upstairs, so we're going to have this. Definition of perfection.
It's a perception of emptiness, which is linked with a desire filled with love to help suffering to all sentient beings.
Yeah, the wish.
Could you just put it under the influence of bodhicitta?
Yeah. Please don't write down. Just this. You can remember. You need to take some. What's the root text for our study? Good, yeah. Who spoke it? Good. What are his estimates? Notice I asked, what are the estimated days? Because his, I mean, God, my chair of bone,
350.
Yeah, 350. Nina, I won't ask you this hard one. John, who wrote the Tibetan monastic commentary that we are studying?
Hari Bhagavan.
Tibetan monastic.
Of Tibet.
Hidatana Bhagavan. 1493 to 1486. Yeah, don't forget. I mean, easily, he was born the year after Columbus came to America.
Could we just say easily that it's 500 years ago this year? It makes it a lot easier.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Oh, we only have a party.
That's what I was, that was my next.
Another excuse.
But what month was he born? What day?
No,
we don't care.
We could make t-shirts and we could have a parade.
T-shirts.
I want a
party. Happy 500. Yeah.
Forget Columbus.
Is that yours?
Okay, 1493, 1568, right?
No, but it fell down on the floor.
Nina, definition of the Dharma Gene.
Now I'm not there. So if you ask me questions, I'm not
going to
answer right.
I'll give you an easy one. Definition of taking refuge. Short definition. Two things necessary. I mean, minimum. If you get this right, I don't care. Two things have to happen for you to go to mommy. You can guess. Why do you run to mommy? Why does anybody run to their mother?
For help.
Having a thought that acts of its own accord, that consists of hoping that an object outside of oneself will, I forgot the verb.
Render
one irresistible.
So basically, in fact, I almost prefer if you put the two causes for that. Which is one was
fear.
Fear. Secondly,
belief
that this object can help. That's why you run to mommy. Why do you run if something bad happens? Why to mommy? I think she can help you.
Not as right.
I know, but I don't have that. I have the other definition.
Wait a minute. You didn't use that in the general definition of refuge because it wouldn't necessarily be fear. Ordinary refuge.
Yeah, it's not mentioned ordinary refuge. But I don't know. Because you take when I think.
You might buy a Mercedes.
You know, I forgot.
It makes you happy. It doesn't mean you're afraid.
Yeah, that's true. Anything
that's
old
one. Feel fear.
This does take refuge and not my other take refuge and not Buddhist taking refuge. If you think it can help you. But doesn't it, when you say render one assistance, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's a kind of a problem.
Well, but not necessarily fear. You may not feel rich.
Okay.
Fear.
Definition of Dharma
Jewel. Dharma Jewel is the enlightened side of truth in which either one of the, either a sensation or a path has been realized.
Yeah. Okay. And give me one example. It's basically, in that case, it's the enlightened side of existence. Consisting either of a past or a system.
Okay. Or both.
Okay. I think I have to cancel the both part.
Really?
Right.
You
did know we had it that
yes.
way.
I thought I did cancel.
You did, yes, you did.
Grammatically, you can read it that way, but a sensation is permanent and alarmed is always infinite.
Can you
lock
it out of the translation?
Yes.
In your vocabulary?
Although, next course, I might come up with something that's both. There's something that's close to both.
You can't say what?
Don't worry about it. Okay. I'll come up with something that's close and some close. Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Give me an example of a path.
A path?
Yeah,
the
three
principles?
Good. Give me
what
those three. That's fine.
Renunciation,
yeah.
Bodhicitta, and...
Yeah, good, nice. Okay, that's an example of a pattern. Lee, example of a sensation.
Anger.
Anger? Well, you should get into debate about that. Maybe you're talking about the end of anger. Or...
Is this
an example of a sensation.
That's the example I gave in my homework.
No, then you have to say the end of anger in a person's mind.
The end of anger, excuse me.
Okay.
Right, I beg your pardon.
The permanent ending of anger in a person's mind. There's other sensations. I'll give you a few. I'll give you a few that don't depend on individual analysis. They don't depend on singularity.
Should we write these down or should we not write them down?
You don't have as in hell or the animal or... you also reach a cessation before you see emptiness correctly, where you can never again destroy your basic virtues. You will never again destroy your basic virtues through wrong view or anger. You know, my sayas, I don't do that. You know, I went to all those classes and I got a certificate. By the way, I managed to get to do for the first class. You know, I throw all this stuff out. It's happened. I've seen it happen. It's okay. You take all the chances.
Reach a point where you can never again destroy your basic virtues.
And then they get
some
kind of a weird...
Yeah, but
become some kind of a weird person. They often come back years later and you're not the same anymore. So anyway, that's destroying your basic virtues.
Excuse me, you had several syllables after that. You can never again destroy your basic virtues.
Through anger.
Oh,
or through wrong views.
Thank you.
Is that cessation the cause of the previous cessation that you mentioned?
Probably, yeah, something to do with that. It's probably related, but I wouldn't want to say it because I haven't. It's not
that. Well, you certainly couldn't have it after the other one.
Yeah, right.
I mean, really.
Okay. Ariel. Describe a refuge that we have in common with practitioners of a lesser scope. Give it to small people.
Feeling the fear of the suffering of the lower realm. And believing in the power of the three jewels to protect you. You take refuge in one or more of the three jewels.
Right, nice. Ooh, you must have been saying. You know, the irony is you guys know this better than I do. Okay. Deanna, describe result refuge. A lot of people got this wrong in the homework. I remember. What's result refuge? I always used to get them confused.
I don't know.
Kylie, you know?
Result
refuge? Without looking?
I know.
Any movement of the mind?
When you take refuge in your future Buddhahood?
Yes. Janet says Buddha. Assuming it's future. We don't know, do we?
That's right.
I mean,
the future could be a very long time.
I mean, as far as you're concerned, I know it.
Isn't there a sutra that says that eventually everybody will be?
Oh, no, absolutely. That's the idea of Buddha nature. Because your mind has emptiness, you will become Buddha. But what I'm saying is, I don't know that she's not loving you.
I'm not, believe me.
That's what they always say. That's what all Buddhas always say. That.
Who are you?
Kylie, shorter definition of the greater ways wish for enlightenment.
Shorter definition of the greater ways wish for enlightenment. I think it's bodhicitta being the wish to fulfill the needs, perfectly fulfill the needs of others and of yourself.
No, two wishes. What are the two wishes?
The wish to attain total enlightenment for the benefit of others.
And the wish to help others. Those two wishes.
Well, that's not fulfilling their needs.
It is, but it's not stated like that.
But okay. You don't include yourself.
You got it. It wasn't
right.
No.
You don't include.
I felt like if I said the wish to help everyone and to help yourself, he's going to say, nah, it's not fulfilling needs.
No, it was a really simple thing. He gave us his king cut.
Oh, here it is. For Mrs. Kylie. Describe the two types of the wish for enlightenment. Oh, that's not one. No. By the way, it says here, if you know two different ways of splitting the wish into two, you may write either one.
What?
There's two ways to split it into two. I think you only learned one, which is fine. You write down the one that you know.
It's what's the other one.
Now, don't forget us. Yeah. Keep going.
You're
going to
get confused, leave. Am I going to know?
Yeah, what were you doing?
What
are you asking?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, you said... You
split bodhicitta into two and tell me what you want.
The wish of prayer and the wish of engagement.
What are you looking at?
Well, thank you. It ended, Michael. We don't have time to study.
Yeah, right. You bring a lute right on your hand.
Bring a lute.
Yeah. Okay, engaging and try to describe them a little. You know, one is... I don't mind if you say you're directly involved with the actions of bodhisattva. And one is not directly involved. Obviously, they're both involved, but not directly involved.
One
is directly involved with taking the vows, and one is not directly involved with taking the vows. But I don't think the second one is the person who hasn't taken the vows. It's just not directly involved in his vows.
Is this, excuse me, is that the wish of prayer that you're speaking
yeah.
of? May I ask, it says, is this for the wish of enlightenment as as a prayer does not depend on.
Either not directly dependent. I think I might have put it in a lot of people's homework.
Yeah,
I
you did.
What?
Forgive me.
Does not directly depend on one taking the vow or two actually engaging.
You said yes, it depends on one having taken.
Yeah, that's incorrect.
What
distinction does that make directly? I can tell you what it means in the case of acting out in a as a bodhisattva, and I think I told you that as a bodhisattva. I mean, they have it defined in the text.
So it's like the act of directly involved moments of vow inactivity?
Directly involved with activity of a bodhisattva means, you know, actually giving somebody something with the conscious intention that by this act, may I become a Buddha and may he become my student in the future.
And may he become my student in the future Buddha?
Like that, yeah. Directly involved with that, with the activities of a Buddha, bodhisattva. What it means to be directly dependent on the vows, I don't know. I have to tell you.
But you emphasize within the wish of engagement that all activities, you know, body, speech, or mind are assessed in terms of whether
there is
not
this famous thing in Sanjadeva where, you know, even when the bodhisattva is pissing, he's doing it for sentient beings. You know, it's not. I don't know. Anyway, I'll have to study that more. Frankly. Okay. Number 10, give the definition of nirvana.
Nirvana is a sensation which comes from individual analysis.
What is it, sensation?
Sensation of mental friction.
Yeah, and there's yeah, which is the opposite. By the way, if you've been a Dharma student for a while, please don't put down these old things that you heard 2 years ago or something like that. Okay, I get that sometimes. It irritates me. Sometimes the more advanced students, they don't bother to study it precisely, and they come in and they write down something, they hear it in some class, and I know what it is. I heard it too, you know, and it's imprecise and sometimes incorrect. So go study exactly what the book says, okay? That's the reason you're here.
Are you distinguishing between the knowledge and the semantics, or...?
No, I'm saying the way that Kedava Tenpa Dargi expressed it, because there's always a reason why he did that. He's not just... You're probably getting a feeling now for why he doesn't use a word unless he has something meaning to it. You know? He doesn't add another adverb or another adjective unless it's important, you know, especially in a definition.
Except
that
oftentimes important. Words aren't qualified.
In what sense?
Like enlightenment.
Oh, you mean he doesn't say Mahayana enlightenment?
Reality work.
Yeah,
totally.
You still get in trouble.
No, you still get in trouble.
No, you use the word and say, well, how do I know you know what the word means?
There's a study of that. We'll get to
that. I know. You did it on my homework.
They have something to debate in monsters.
Yeah, you got to have something. Okay. Carolyn, what does individual analysis mean here, meaning in the definition of the
monster?
Oh, we didn't add that, did we? Which resulted from...
Yeah, she said that. She said individual.
Okay.
Thank you.
You guys are getting real debaters.
Yeah, it means seeing the four noble truths one by one as a result of having perceived anything.
Yeah, please add that second part, okay? As a result of having perceived anything directly. Because otherwise, individual analysis is four noble truths. You can do it right now. Or Shmo can do that.
Well, don't you also mean immediately after perceiving anything?
Yeah. Immediately after.
It's not something that happened 10 years later. You said, gee, you know, I perceive it.
I'm talking about that here. Mm-hmm. Okay. Nina, what is nirvana with something that no one means and nirvana with nothing that no one means? In this school. What's left over?
Well, the seed.
You got it, buddy. This is Monday we're talking.
Okay.
The stuff, the five suffering heaps. Somebody in another class asked me, does it only refer to your body? And I asked Rinpoche, and he said, no, it's all five heaps. Our suffering heaps. They all get transformed when you die. And I said, well, how can his mind, his mental heap, be as lousy as his physical heap because he's now got rid of all his from the translation. So hasn't his mind, in a sense, transformed already, and that's not left over? And he says, well, in the sense that it was produced by his former karma and klesha, that mental afflictions, is still dirty, even though it's having nice thoughts for now. Okay, so from the viewpoint of it's having been produced by something impure, it's impure. Is it impure by its essence now? No. It's pure. So we still say it's in the category of suffering heaps, although he's not also capable of suffering anymore. It's suffering in the sense that it was produced by his bad deeds.
Well, that sort of implies, along with the physical heaps and the other ones, that no matter what you do, once you get to that point, there's nothing else you can do until you die at that point. And then,
well, into a Hinayana, that's true. Once you got rid of your mental affliction obstacles on December 15th, 1993, you don't have anything else to do anymore. It's clean.
No, no, but I'm saying in this case, what's left over, you're saying even the mental is still left over because it's
right.
Produced by these other ones.
Right, right.
It's a sort of a fatalistic thing. Even your mind, there's nothing else you can do except for wait until you die, and then they're all going to be manifest purely.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
What was that thing about a painful death? But that's just...
Oh, no, the physical body was still giving pain. How he will perceive it, or how he'll react to it. And I'm curious personally when we get to Pasangika what they say. I'm not sure what they say.
Did they tell us that they said that when you perceive emptiness directly and then you come out of it? And that you still have.
Yeah, right. For them, leftover means something else.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't want to get into it.
Yeah. Okay.
Who is kind of. John? There's a kind of nirvana called nirvana which doesn't stay. What is the meaning of the phrase doesn't stay?
Means that you're not satisfied no matter where you are.
No, no, let me try again. Wait.
Means that you don't abide in either samsara or nirvana.
In a lower mode. Yeah. By the way, some people didn't write that on there. You better write it.
Totally wrong.
They don't stay in samsara and they don't stay in a lower nirvana.
I thought any nirvana you don't call total nirvana. It's like assume lower.
No. Don't assume anything. No. You're in a nice monastic class here. You've got to be precise.
It was
referred
to as the extreme of peace.
Yeah, they're called the extreme of peace and the extreme of the world.
Oh, I thought
in neither extreme. By the way, those are not the extremes that the middle path threads its way through. Some people got that wrong.
But can you elaborate?
When you talk about Madhyamika, when you talk about the middle path, is also going through two extremes, but it ain't those two extremes. There's two sets of two extremes. When you talk about Madhyamika, the two extremes are what? Thinking things are self-existing, and thinking that if they weren't self-existent, they couldn't exist.
So that's the middle path.
Nihilism, I don't know, Nietzsche, Kierkegaard, whatever they are, forget it. Okay, thinking things are self-existent, and just thinking that if things aren't self-existent, they couldn't exist. And Madhyamika goes to the middle, that's why it's called Madhyamika. That ain't the two extremes we're talking about here. We're not talking about why Madhyamika is called Madhyamika. We're talking about why not staying is called not staying. Some people got that wrong. Because I brought it up as an example of an extreme, and then some people took it to mean.
It's a question. For the purposes of the text, is there a paraphrasing when you say, like, staying is not staying in samsara, not staying in nirvana, or do you want
that's
us
right.
to use, like,
yeah,
the
I prefer
extreme
that you
of peace
use,
and the extreme of peace?
You won't get anything what? Wrong, you won't lose any points. I think it's just good for you to say the nirvana which doesn't stay in the extreme of peace, which means lower nirvana, and doesn't stay in the extreme of the world, which means samsara. That would be precise. Okay. Vilma. Describe the three main parts of the method for achieving nirvana.
It's
an argument. I have to correct 40 papers. I have to correct it again on 80 times.
The three main parts are the training and wisdom.
Is number one.
Is number one.
Which precedes selflessness. Okay.
Right. And that.
And it'd be very nice if you said that. Training and wisdom, which precedes selflessness.
And that wisdom is from is under the
good.
Is under concentration and morality.
Yeah, it's under the influence. Somebody in New Jersey said, "How about immersed in?" Mm-hmm. I like that. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Immersed in. It's immersed in what?
Concentration and morality.
The training of concentration. Training of morality. Okay. A lot of people thought those were the three steps. They're not.
What were the three?
They thought that the three trainings were the three steps. That's not. You're doing it correctly. She's saying training number one relates to step one. Trainings number two and three relate to step number two. And then what's step number three?
It's when you have lost the habit of seeing things as self-existent, and
no, it was the opposite. It's getting the habit of what?
Of seeing things as empty.
Yeah, of realizing emptiness. Practicing realizing emptiness. Doksim Gomba. Practicing what you saw on the path of truth. Going over and over what you saw on the path of truth. Habituating yourself to what you saw in the path of sleep. And I really prefer if you say it that way. Okay? Getting used to what you saw in the path of sleep.
In the path of seeing.
You saw emptiness. Getting used to the emptiness, which you understood directly for the first time, shouldn't have understood, saw directly for the first time. In the path of sleep. That's the third step. So step two has two parts, right? Step two has two trainings. Whose turn? Regina. P. What's P mean?
I don't tell you.
Respectful for. Respectful
sister.
For a lady in Thailand. Okay. Mm. My dear sister. what is important to identify? Why is it important to identify the object we deny? Why is it important to identify self existency? Do you remember?
Uh-huh. I do. Because we want to know what emptiness is, but before we want to, before we knowing that, we have to know what it's we deny that is a self.
It's what emptiness is empty of. If that's all you put, I'll be happy. Okay? It's what emptiness is empty of. If you don't know what emptiness is empty of, well, how do you know emptiness exists? Self-existent. You have to be able to imagine a self-existent thing. Can you have an imagination of a self-existent thing? Yes. Is there a self-existent thing? No. Okay. Alright. You alright?
No, because I can't find my homework to class 8, and that's exactly
what. Well, you're supposed to read off the homework anyway.
I'll give you
I don't know any of the stuff. Okay.
Homework, no, I don't care. I just want you to get it right. I got what you to think about it. Okay, three different people in the magic show. What's going on?
Oh, okay.
She remembers.
No, no, it's not your thing. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Limited. So the spectator is like...
By the way, the further you say this, the original spectator, something like that, because the last guy is a spectator too.
Okay, so
crown.
Actually, I've got it backwards in a sense. Anyway, the spectator is like somebody who has not perceived emptiness directly, and sees things as self-existent and believes they're self-existent. Good. And the magician is like somebody who's perceived emptiness directly and sees things as self-existent, but knows perfectly well they're not.
After he comes out of that meditation, right? Someone who has seen in the past emptiness,
excuse me, okay.
And who's now out of that perception, and he's walking around and he's
That's the thing from the very last.
Same thing. How can you see things if you're in the perception of emptiness?
So then,
I got some points for that.
Yeah, he's post meditation. It's important because number three is what.
So then, the latecomer is like someone who is a sentient being, a non-Buddhist sentient being, who is at that very moment seeing emptiness directly,
and
doesn't believe it's this horse and doesn't see it as a horse.
Right. Okay, good. Does he believe anything else, by the way?
I don't think belief can occur
at
that moment.
You can't think, this is this, this is that.
Sāsī bhūhī jūṣīṁ yatāśāṁ virāviṁ śīnyam dekhyam pādhi Sāṅgye śīndhu mitte uvāgi
This is the end of Class 11. You have been listening to Buddhist Refuge with Geshe Michael Roach, presented by the Asian Classics Institute. The Asian Classics Institute is dedicated to preserving the pure teachings and practice of Buddhism. For a listing of other topics available, write to the Asian Classics Institute, P.O. Box 20373, New York, New York, 10009, or call 212-475-7752.